All right, and we are live. We may have some connectivity issues. I'm having some technical difficulties still, but I want to welcome everyone. 30 April 2022. Tomorrow is May 1st. It's a holiday everywhere. Or in most places, at least, it's a holiday. You know, it's actually two things. It's a pre-Christian holiday, but it's also, or other than Christian, and antiquity, European holiday, and but it's also the observation or celebration of the Haymarket Massacre, and that's actually from the United States. I don't recall the exact year. It was 1886 or something like this. Someone will know, put it in the comments. But yeah, it was a very big turning point. You know, the kind of, sometimes we jump into these. Let me just check first if we have a sound. I'm gonna open up a comments for the live stream. Okay, there it is. And anyway, so let me just check if I think we're okay. All right, let me know if you can hear me. We're going to be digging into a sort of broad view what's happening right now. Now let me preface it this way. A few weeks back already in Russian, well, in Crimean media, Crimea has like this autonomous republic status. Okay. So they're a part of the Russian Federation and they're, you know, represented by Russia, like in international matters and things like that, but internally they have like their own media that can like say things. And in Russia's information war, they run multiple scripts. They like send multiple, they send different messages through like multiple fronts, right? So for example, like in the DPR, like Denis Pushilin, he basically has some of these like even Eurasianist credentials, but at the same time, he wasn't part of the original leadership when the, you know, republics first declared for autonomy. Now there's a kind of a debate over the intentions of the residents of the DPR, you know, whether they, when they vote, what they really wanted, but it just seemed like the process that has, as you can see, it took 8 years. People wanted it to be taking place like in 6 months or 2 years or something like that. And so a different expectation level of leadership, right, was a problem that had to be resolved. And I think the figure of Denis Pushilin is in that position to kind of like placate and delay, or to lower the expectation of integration into the, as it were, to be recognized by Russia. That now that factor alone, you know, Russia had always been their various sort of like pseudo-official backhanded support for the LPR and DPR. Prior to that, was based in the, you know, humanitarian consideration of the rights of the people being persecuted on the basis of a Russian ethnicity in a bordering country. So at any rate, there was some expectation that they could do something. Yeah, there was some expectation that they could do something, and that they would. Now, a process is now extending into the Kherson region. So what we started the show by saying was that in the Crimean Republic, which is sort of pseudo, autonomous, their media was floating, calling Kherson already Kherson Republic. They were just calling that in the media. Now that's an important location for the protection of Crimea. Any future attack right now from this day forward would have to begin in the region of Kherson. And would not jeopardize Crimea. So any previous talk of the Kiev junta about retaking Crimea, like setting aside your legitimate security concerns, if we imagine that they're a sovereign state, but pre-2014 Ukraine would have had legitimate security concerns about the status of Crimea. But clearly, by going in the direction of an ethno-nationalist state, provides a clear, the majority of people in Crimea are Russian. And all of Crimea, even though it's part of Ukraine, just wasn't a problem. Yeah, it had an influence on their, political schema. It's just a problem when Ukraine decides to become effectively more unitary state. Does that make sense? So Kherson going over to pro-Russian side, I remember this process from 8 years ago, and this seems, just from what I recall, this seems to be a faster process than the process that we saw with Donetsk Republic, in terms of when they began to use the ruble. I just remember it taking longer. So we'll see. But that's very interesting. So Kherson now, it's a new border. Like, that's not, it could change as the outcome of like an extraordinarily, high increase in the conflict, in the, numbers deployed and the amount of damage and deaths would spike tremendously moving forward to contest Kherson. So it's a problem. I think that's just a new border to consider from now on. And more looking further to the west from Kherson, people have postulated, including leadership and critics have also said in Russian media, just as a quick review, in alt media, right? You have Gherkin, Strelkor Gherkin saying one thing, you have Colonel Kassad saying another. People could write or chat endlessly about the things that they talk about. What's happening? How would you connect or criticism thereof? Odessa region to Kherson, right? From Mykolaiv. So these are all in play. I think Odessa But just I look at the relationship to Russia's line on Azovstal and delaying the need to resolve, talking about the Azovstal complex and Russia's strategic move to delay outcome or decision making on this, means that they're showing it's a hard flex because time is on their side. Time is on their side. Excuse me. And that's how I look at it. Let me just check if, okay, good. Great. So in other regions of the Western Ukraine, you have there's a funny provoked information war, like fights on the blogosphere between ultranationalist Poles and ultranationalist Galicians. Let's see. There was a professor of history or philosophy. At the Warsaw University, anyway. His name is Pishorsky. He was trying to talk to experts and organize conferences between like Russian experts and Polish experts, things like this. But he was accused of being like, or sort of arrested on the leaked to the media by the police, public accusation that it was like going to be Russian and Chinese spying or something like this. I don't know if he was charged. I'm not claiming any legal proficiency, let alone like in the ins and outs of Polish law. I'm not commenting if the arrest was legal or if he deserved it. I'm just telling you what I understand happened. I could be wrong, but he was like arrested, and then it was like he was being charged, or they had written up charges, or they wrote charges but then dropped them. But they were able to do this. I think he was like in jail without, I think, a charge really processed for like a couple of years, right? So they were invoking some kind of national security law in Poland. So this is very, very disconcerting, especially in the field of like being an analyst or organizing conferences, things like this. Very disconcerting. And then his colleague from Germany, Manuel Ochsenreiter, passed away in the last year or so. And they were, as I understand, had a friendship, and my understanding is that they had a strong, professional background, mutual respect. So I'm sure that Pishorsky was upset at the passing of Ochsenreiter. But all these people have been accused of being Russian assets, or however you want to, consider it. What we're contrasting that to is basically there is a percentage of the Polish population which is pro-Russian, and they get, I think the number is dropping, I don't know, but maybe not. However, it used to be higher. I mean, I don't know if it's dropping, in a state of decline right now, if it's stabilized, but it used to be higher, of course. The whole Polish discourse has been changing. So just in terms of the educational system, things like this. But if the leaked information in the Russian information war about, okay, the Poland's gonna move in into Western Ukraine in some kind of security maneuver. Sort of like how Turkey entered into Syria in a way. Yeah. You know, how would that, what would happen? So, the Banderites, of course, I think it said, I don't know the numbers, but it was in the hundreds of thousands that were ethnically cleansed, many killed of that, Poles from that area. So the Polish army coming back, you see, even if it's like in some NATO kind of approved but not initiated or whatever, that, you know, they're how they play around with you. So yeah, just think of it in basic strategic terms. Once Poland's in there, does Poland want to go out? You follow? Why would Poland leave? It's a permanent security concern. You know, and then they're going to start having social, there's a Polish minority. Right? And then people will start discovering that they're Polish again. And it happens all the time. Rise up and get into the new bureaucracy, like Polish military civilian government over time, like 5 years, 10 years, hold a new referendum. Oh my God, they had 40% Poles. Well, what are all the public sector jobs? Oh, it's them. They're all Poles now. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's not legitimate. It's just, certain policies can kind of goose it along. See how that works. So, yeah, social engineering. Let's take a look and see what you guys are talking about. Yeah. Right. So that issue there, it can be, first of all, that would be hard to do unless that's what the U.S. wanted to do. Right. But if that's a good way to manage, I mean, if Poland wants to try to take over the management, you know, of course, from a first military and then legal, et cetera, framework, but as an intelligence, from an intelligence framework, they might try to even use their own and operationalize their own kind of versions of Galician nationalists, like little like sock puppet, but behind with the Polish intelligence service behind it. And that would be kind of like a flex for Poland. And it might be taking the direction of thinking they can have some sovereignty. You know, that happened within different Latin American states. Once they had kind of had like well enough good little intelligence services, they can kind of like manipulate positive outcomes consistently, like in neighboring states, start to feel kind of strong in their region. It's just basic international relations speak, but in just regular terms. A lot of things written about this in the dusty books. So, yeah, I mean, the main thing to remember with this, we talked about last time, was that, or I might have just texted it out, is that it's kind of something where Poland and Russia would have to communicate through signs, you know, like telepathically, some Russian Polish mind meld over this issue. Just how Russia responds is a sign of what Russia thinks is good. So not what they say in terms of what Poland does. Poland, if Poland wants to put out the Galician nationalists, which is like the backbone of so-called quote-unquote Ukrainian Nazism, that's how you untangle the oxymoron of Ukrainian Nazism. Is it? We talked about the heavy metal scene, lesser extent punk, but large level football fans and basic like local mainstream like pop, you know, rock, like back in the 80s and 90s. Well, after these things started to be allowed more liberally in Glasnost and Perestroika, you already had like skinhead and Nazi football fans. There's been a problem in Ukraine for a while, but transforming it into groups that train to do violence in the Maidan were like trained like the same people who were like trained to form these militias, IDAR, you know, or the ones that came out of Pravi Sector. Pravi Sector were in the Maidan protests and I came out with like helmets, but they were like construction helmets and they had like shields that were like half cylinders or like barrels cut in half or whatever, shields, making phalanxes and shield walls and shit. Anyway, it was a trained force. You had like the Berkut, the wrong orders were given. We're talking about the Maidan color revolution. Turned out it looks like Oliver Stone's documentary kind of makes it look like it was, or he lets the story be told from the point of view of Yanukovych, right? That they were going to put through that the Berkut acted independently, that they were given wrong orders or bad orders to shoot or not shoot or whatever. I don't remember. But or they let the situation deteriorate or cause it to deteriorate in some way. I don't recall the details. I'm not an expert on the day of the event in terms of this number of shots rang out at this time. But I know at one point it seemed like there were snipers that were used as well. And that's always a tactic used in trying to create these situations in color revolutions where you have like a few martyrs, but they're like usually picked off by snipers for no reason. And then you're like, who were the snipers working for? Why were they there? Why did they shoot the crowd, right? Who'd want to do that? So, yeah, loss of security control in the situation. So in the Russian media war, they've caused like a lot of the Ukrainian ultranationalists and the Polish ultranationalists to like argue. A lot of spike in interest in the tensions between Ukraine and Poland and a spike of interest on a Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth and the history of Poland in the territory of the modern former Ukraine. So it's a, I think people do a dive on that. They'll be satisfied with sort of a sense of, you know, of course, like, look, on a certain level, it's not like the Polish government is like this totally sovereign entity, right? That's like a, it's not within a sober assessment of, you know, ranking country sovereignty relative to strength. It's not, Poland's not a superpower, so it has like a subordinate level on the ordinates of power, has a subordinate, you know, position. So not all the decisions of its state institutions are made in the national interest. In fact, a lot of them are not. So it's also a fair thing to say that the Poland could go into Western Ukraine, but then also like leave in the way that NATO might want them to leave, or maybe, who knows what would, you know, how things would evolve. Poland might try to flex if there's anything in there to flex with. But, you know, if they could kind of play their position, because certainly, like we said, Russia's communicating telepathically. You guys know what I mean by that, right? So, you can like carve out the position through the public statements of official diplomacy that come through like the major press, you know, agencies. So that's how you see Russia's attitude. Not like, not directly what the statements say, but just reading the, you know, between the lines, or trying to interpret the Lavrov position to what Lavrov says or how his statements are recorded on in the state agency news. And then the polls will see like, okay, so if we go in there, I mean, you know, because it's, what's the context? What are we talking about? Well, it looks like Russia has struck different, you know, imports of weapons and things coming into Ukraine, but it struck them on the Ukrainian side of the border. However, Poland going in like with their own forces creates a additional situation that makes it, you know, that Poland is effectively openly and fully a belligerent in the conflict in some way, if they don't have a expressed or explicit security arrangement, agreement, pact, alliance, or anything, just understanding officially or telepathically on the posture of the of what Poland's doing. So that's how I look at that situation. I just wanted to catch you up on that and break down how I saw that, those relationships developing. Yes. Well, just as a sort of overview of how I would see the conflict developing, I think they're gonna they would probably I don't, you know, look closely at the development of the day-to-day war maps, or that try to estimate where like the different units and, you know, what brigades and in what numbers are in which positions on any given day. But I would just expect that they would regroup in some way that is talked about in the chatter in Kharkov to form. It seems like there's conflict around even Izium again. So I don't know if they're going to try to develop a larger concerted front or attack. But in the Kherson region, I think they would wait until, or not wait in terms of their number of operations or that they're not doing anything, but in terms of Mykolaiv, I would expect that the phase of securing the Donbas has to be completed first. And that, I think that includes Kharkov, the whole region and the city. That's just my sense of it. I think that if the opportunities arise, and I think they're working to create those opportunities, that they will try to do something. But I think it's just a different process. Just have to look at the population. They would first have to establish, I think it would be difficult. It'd be some other type of republic if it was autonomous, but it would be with Odessa there. Odessa could almost be if it was like a pro-Russian independent republic, could be there and sort of counterbalance some of this Moldova and Romania stuff. But I just don't think there's enough of a population base. I think it's a different process. You know, it's a difficult thing. It's more natural in the areas where the population. More natural in the areas where the population is majority pro-Russian or Russian-friendly or pro-independence. These are different, or Russian. So, you know, those are all different categories. You know, there was Ukrainians that were not anti-Russian. That's the thing. Ukrainian, whatever. You know, it was just these competing definitions of the word, you know, citizen of this territory. In terms of any future potential military activity on Kiev, I'll finish. This will be the last question that I answer. The most important thing is that they already established their willingness and ability to do it. That that's the most important thing. If they hadn't done that thing yet, they hadn't already done it, there would be a lot of talk about that being a red line. Now, of course, they're going to try to make that a red line again. But I think that's going to be, I think that's going to be a red line in the future. They're going to make Kiev a red line, NATO, but it's going to be much less effective and not credible now because it wasn't a red line already. And they already showed that. So that's my sense of it. Anyway, yeah, it's just a quick update today. This I'm saving this, but I won't be uploading it until Monday. I'm just using data. I have some technical difficulties. I have some technological difficulties. Yes, I'm an idiot at these kind of things. So just when they tell me that it's working again, then I'll believe them. So yes, thank you, everybody. That's where I am with it now. All right, take care. Bye-bye.